It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The pandemic has had a ripple effect. Lost jobs. And for many, that means not enough money for food. According to the Department of Human Services, an additional 100,000 Pennsylvanians were on SNAP, food stamps, in April, doubling the largest one-month increase in 16 years. Ann Sanders is a public policy advocate for the local nonprofit Just Harvest. And those numbers I gave are statewide. Are you seeing a similar need here in the Pittsburgh area?
Oh, most definitely. In Allegheny County, we usually have about 130,000, 140,000 people that get food stamps, and it's gone up by about 10,000. So of that 100,000 statewide, about 10% of that is just Allegheny County.
Remind us, how much individuals who qualify for SNAP actually receive?
During the pandemic, as part of the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, everyone's benefits are getting topped off to bring them up to the maximum amount. For a single person, that's $194 a month, or a family of two, that's like $386 a month.
Do you expect the need for SNAP to ease up?
So I expect that this is actually the tip of the iceberg. A lot of times people tend to wait to apply for benefits. Usually people go and obviously had a huge rush on unemployment benefits. Usually SNAP follows unemployment. So I would expect next month, the OEC May's participation numbers, they will be even higher.
Food stamps, SNAP, they're not intended to solve the problem of hunger. So what's it going to take from Pittsburgh and Allegheny County as a whole to help our neighbors who can't afford food during this pandemic?
So we know that SNAP is like the nation's first line against hunger. The maximum amount is intended to be an entire food budget for the family, which is inadequate. It averages about $2.14 per meal. There have also been a number of other anti-hunger initiatives that are going on as well. I think everyone's seen on the news all of the great work that the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank is doing and helping people meet their short-term emergency food needs. And coming out later this month, the state was approved to do a pandemic EBT program. It just refers to the type of card that is used for the benefits. That is a program that was approved for in the Families First Coronavirus Act, and it is meant to help families who are getting free or reduced price meals at their school districts. So any family who you had kids at school, they were getting free or reduced price meals, they will be getting a benefit. Those benefits are just now starting to come out, and it will be $570 per day that the child is missed. So it's about $370 if they were getting free and reduced price meals when schools got out. And families can still apply for school meals. So if your income has changed since schools have closed, you can apply now with your school district if you need to for free or reduced price school meals to get that benefit.
Last week, the Department of Agriculture added Pennsylvania to the list of states where SNAP recipients can order groceries online starting in June. It does not increase the amount people receive, but who might this help?
SNAP online is a great first step in helping people access groceries if they can't get to a grocery store or don't feel safe going to a grocery store during the pandemic. Retailers do have a lot of obstacles in order to be able to accept SNAP payments online. They can only accept SNAP for SNAP-eligible items, so you can't use it for toilet paper. You can't use SNAP to pay for delivery fees. And so we expect that the first retailers that will be able to accept and that will be able to roll this out quickly are going to be companies that are already operating this in other states. So that's Amazon, Walmart, and ShopRite, which is in the eastern part of the state. It will take other retailers probably several months in order to be able to accept this or to use this programming.
Unemployment is at depression-era levels, still growing. With so many people still out of work, do you see an end in sight?
I tend to be an optimist, but I learned last time I was actually helping people apply for SNAP benefits during the last recession. So I learned last time that it really does take a long time for the economy to recover from a blow. and that when one industry is impacted, there's a spiraling effect on other industries. So I really think that the responsiveness of our government and making sure that people have a good safety net that they can access is going to be critical to getting us to bounce back.
Ann Sanders is a public policy advocate for Just Harvest. Thanks for joining us, Ann.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Today is the final day to request a mail-in ballot ahead of the June primary. Those contests, of course, rescheduled from April due to the pandemic. WESA's Lucy Perkins has been following the state of the state voting system. Welcome, Lucy.
Thanks for having me.
So this will be Pennsylvanians' first chance to vote by mail en masse. From your reporting, Lucy, how many people look likely to vote that way?
Well, it looks like a lot of people are going to be voting this way. In Allegheny County, more people have applied to vote by mail than anywhere else in the entire state, and the elections division here is working day and night to try and process all of these applications.
Allegheny County specifically is limiting the number of precincts from over 1,300 to less than 300 for those who choose to go to their polling places. They're trying to stay mindful of social distancing guidelines. How might that affect the process?
Well, officials say that, you know, there probably won't be very long lines on election day because so many people have already applied to vote by mail. The number of people who have applied to vote by mail exceeds the total turnout for the 2012 presidential primary. Of course, that turnout depends on whether every single person who applies to vote by mail actually does it. But the actual process will look a little bit different for those who do vote in person. The county is asking that you bring your own black or blue pen to mark your ballot. They're asking that you wear a mask and you practice social distancing measures while you're there, which will mean, you know, staying 6 feet apart from other voters and things like that.
A reminder here, if you're new to Pennsylvania, we have a closed primary system, so you must be registered to a party to participate in the primary. Lucy, you report that's about 800,000 Republicans and Democrats combined countywide. Whether it's mail-in or in-person, is everybody on board with that plan?
There's been a bit of mixed reaction from officials. State House Republicans on Friday said that they wanted the county to restore all 1,323 polling places because they were worried about lines and they were worried about voters waiting in long lines and being disenfranchised in that way. Democrats are largely supportive of vote-by-mail efforts, and County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, who of course is a Democrat, stands by the plan. The plan itself, though, was approved by the Board of Elections with bipartisan support. So there was Democratic and Republican support for this plan when it was voted on back in April.
Do poll workers have what they need, the training, the assurances for their own safety?
Well, as far as training, that's happening now. They're doing online training ahead of the primary for poll workers. They will have personal protective equipment, the county says. Every person will have a infection protection kit, which will include sanitizer, gloves, masks, that sort of thing. They will also have a lot of disinfecting wipes on hand to wipe down high-touch areas.
Voters have until 5 p.m. today to request a ballot. The County Elections Division must receive completed ballots by 8 p.m. on election night. Lucy Perkins covers government and accountability at WESA. Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks, Kevin.
And of course, one of the most contentious primary contests is for the State House. Democratic Representative Summer Lee is facing North Braddock Borough Councilor Chris Rowland. While Lee is an ardent progressive, Rowland favors a more moderate approach. 90.5 WESA's Onley Herring reports the race brings long simmering tensions within the Democratic Party to the surface.
Lee easily won her first term in House District 34 over a longtime incumbent in 2018. That made Lee the first Black woman from Allegheny County to serve in the Pennsylvania legislature, where she represents parts of the Mon Valley, Pittsburgh, and some eastern suburbs. The Swissvale resident thinks that as a state rep, she's shined a light on critical but long overlooked issues.
Like a Green Deal, like single-payer health care, we've advanced around dignity for incarcerated women, around police accountability, all these kind of different issues that we've been talking about, a living wage instead of just thinking about a minimum wage.
But Lee's unapologetic advocacy has sometimes caused friction with local trades unions and less progressive factions in her party. In fact, the Allegheny County Democratic Committee endorsed her opponent for the June 2nd primary. Chris Rowland has been a member of the North Braddock Borough Council since 2010. He and Lee both support abortion rights and stricter gun laws, but Rowland portrays himself as more of a pragmatist.
We just need a strong voice that's going to sit and have a conversation with people that may have a different view of what they want to see.
For example, Rowland says while he backs more rigorous regulations and taxes on natural gas drilling, he supports the fracking industry and welcomes manufacturing. Economic fortunes have withered in some of the district's communities. The legacy of steel's decline.
I think that when you look at some of the manufacturing jobs that are in the district, a lot of the communities rely on that funding for their tax base.
Some of Rowland's supporters, like Braddock Council President Robert Parker, say Rowland's more moderate approach makes him better positioned to steer investment to the district.
I think Chris will make a change. I think Chris would be easier to work with because he's a listener and he wants to get things done.
Lee, meanwhile, wants to halt fracking, at least until more is known about its health and environmental impacts. In recent years, her district has become increasingly diverse, and a quarter of its residents are Black. Lee is concerned about the price they've already paid for industries whose pollution can harm public health.
And it's not fair that our communities and communities like that are always made to make those sacrifices, always have to face those very difficult choices, where we would probably like our community to go in a different direction. We don't always.
Another place where the candidates differ is police accountability. The topic has received more attention since 2018 when an officer fatally shot Black teenager Antoine Rose, who was unarmed. Lee responded by seeking a host of reforms, like rewriting the rules on when police can use deadly force. Rowland says he'd want to consult with police unions on that idea, but they've long resisted it. Rowland says one solution could be to consolidate police departments. He's been studying the concept with other municipal leaders as a means to increase officer pay and provide better training.
And our goal out of that was to have diversity in our department, transparency, accountability.
Rowland hopes changes like these will improve police community relations. But Lee says to bridge those divisions in a lasting way, people from marginalized groups must help to shape policies. And she says that means the Democratic Party establishment should support more diverse candidates and stop resisting change within its ranks.
You know, it benefits them that things stay that way, but the new ones come with new ideas and come with a new perspective. How do you integrate those two things?
Lee's supporters say neither the Democratic Party nor the legislature will change without grassroots pressure. That's why Nicholas O'Rourke of the Working Families Party says his organization will spare no expense on this race.
There's so much at stake here, and so we are so committed to making sure that she who has a vision for a cleaner, healthier, sustainable future, that she remains in office.
There's no Republican on the ballot, which means voters will likely decide the direction their district will take on June 2nd. Amelie Herring, 90.5 WESA News.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Masks have become a way of life for most people now, and some companies have changed their operations to make them. The idea is pretty simple. Making masks is a way to keep people working while providing something important during the coronavirus pandemic. But at one central Pennsylvania business, that simple idea created a lot of conflict and led to several workers walking off the job. PA Post's Ed Mahan tells the story.
Now this is the sewing room.
Football jerseys made by workers here hang on the walls of this Northumberland County manufacturer. But on a recent day, masks sit on tables, including ones decorated with basketballs, footballs, and cat faces. Richard Rock is wearing a plain one, one of his company's latest prototypes.
The mask you're wearing now, is that sort of the final
process? It's really close. It's really close.
What's left?
The mechanic's coming in tomorrow to see if he can fix the zigzag machine so that we can put the nose piece in here. Mm-hmm.
That nose piece prevents glasses from fogging up. Richard is the majority owner and president of All Sports America. It's a small business, usually with about 20 employees. Until March, it specialized in sewing jerseys for youth football programs. Then the coronavirus happened and the company made a change.
If I wasn't able to make these masks, I feel we would probably be bankrupt.
Richard hopes to still be in the mask business a year from now.
In the United States, they're not going to want to wear white or surgical masks. They're going to want to wear fashion masks.
But the transition has changed the company in more ways than one. Richard and his employees clashed over issues, including how many people it was safe to have working at once. In mid-April, several workers walked out.
I said, I cannot be a part of this.
That's longtime production manager Scott Hoffman.
I am not quitting, but I'm going to leave the building if you proceed with this, because I will not be a part of putting everyone's life in jeopardy.
Scott first started working for Allsports in 1998. He's 57 now. He wanted to stay there for several more years, in part because the company made accommodations for his old leg injury. He could sit if he needed to or even leave early.
You know, I wanted to stick it out because I knew the chances of me going to another employer with my restrictions was going to be pretty difficult.
Then, in mid-March, Governor Tom Wolf ordered more than 100 types of businesses to shut their doors.
We cannot allow this virus to overwhelm our hospitals.
Allsports applied for a waiver to stay open. The company said it would have less than 10 workers on duty at once. The state approved it, and Allsports was ready to make masks. Scott got to work on a safety plan. He wanted 6 people, maybe 7, each working at their own sewing station.
They'd be working on their own masks, and they wouldn't be doing an assembly line.
But Richard wanted a more complicated mask and an assembly line system, with up to 14 sewers in the room at once. Scott objected.
What if people get sick? And he said, if they get sick, they get sick. In the back of my mind, I knew that he was willing to risk other people.
When I asked Richard about the statement, he told me it was more complicated.
It's like a politician who was taken out of context.
Richard says he does care about safety, and that if people get sick, that could close down the plant. He says his plan would still allow sewing machines to be safely spaced 12 feet apart. But before Richard could implement his plan, Scott left and 3 sewers followed.
The room itself is not huge. With 5 or 6 of us, it was fine.
Virginia Richmond was one of them.
I'm 65. You know, I can't afford to just throw my life away for a few bucks.
Now, Richard is having trouble hiring new workers.
People don't actually show up for interviews, and then when they do show up and you hire them, then they don't show up to work.
But work continues, and by the beginning of the month, he was up to 1 part-time and 3 full-time sewers. As for Scott, on a recent day, he sat on his porch wearing an Allsports hat and talked about how he planned to look for another job. And if he can't find one, he will apply for disability.
I wish that I was still there working for Allsports, but I'm not going to put anybody else's health or well-being, you know, at risk to stay there.
As more and more businesses are reopening in some parts of the state, that means more and more workers are going to find themselves in Scott's position, trying to decide what's safe enough. Ed Mahan, PA Post, Sunbury, Northumberland County.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovic, and Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.